Council House was a two-bed semi with an outside lav and a copper, bath that is, that hung on the wall. There was a manse on the detached side of us. A splintery, creosoted wooden fence separated us. If I made my swing climb high enough, I could get a view of their kitchen. Sometimes I could see the vicar and his family sitting at the breakfast table. Orange juice, bowls of porridge and toast smothered with marmalade. Religious people ate really well. I was sure God had something to do with it. I didn't swing on the swing too often, as it had a tendency to make me feel hungry. We weren't religious. Life was never dull in our household. There was always a steady stream of visitors, young and old. Most of the time we were borrowing things from each other. Flour, sugar, ladders, a tanner or 10 bob, with a promise of, pay you back on Friday or I'll bring it back tomorrow. Always there was a cup of strong black tea to be had before departing and, of course, the story that went with why there was a need to borrow the thing in the first place. Our local church hall doubled up as a community room. It was the place to go for functions. My brother had his 8th birthday party there. The place was festooned with balloons and fading paper chains. We sat beside the trestle tables wearing our party hats, stuffing cucumber and paste sandwiches, and washed it all down with orange squash. Fortunately, we had the party games beforehand to prevent further mess. It was a condition written in the hall hire. Mrs. Gill, our neighbour, made the cake, crammed it with buttercream icing and her homemade raspberry jam. With the candles lit, she brought it in from the kitchen, her face glowing in the candlelight. She placed it before my brother and encouraged him to blow it out. He just sat there, drinking in the sight, a serene smile on his face. Then Shelley Greenway became impatient and leant forward to do the job for him. Strands of her long hair caught the flame and went up with a whoosh, throwing sparks and fizzes. She was doused in orange squash and removed, snivelling, to the back room. The rest of us giggled, unaware that it was not part of the party entertainment, though none of us appreciated the aftermath of burned hair smell. Mrs. Beaton responded enthusiastically with the air freshener, which made us all cough, and the windows had to be opened. As we feasted on the birthday tea, our mothers sat gossiping in a distant corner, huge handbags lined up on the table in front of them. These handbags were multi-purpose. They had unfathomable depths, like Mary Poppins's bag. They contained everything you could think of, from plasters to screwdrivers, and in my grandma's case, dental glue. They also made lethal weapons. I had seen my grandpa in action with hers. Saturdays for grandma were reserved for watching the wrestling at the town hall. The build-up to this entailed the ritual trip to the hairdresser's to have her hair set by an animated Mr. Martin, apparently the holy grail of blue rinse expertise. There she spent a couple of hours having her head cooked beneath the dryer while reading magazines and holding loud conversations with her friend and sidekick, Hetty Fluck. When dry, Mr. Martin removed the curlers and brushed her hair out before boofing it up again and spraying it in place with such an inordinate amount of hairspray that her hair barely moved, even in a fierce wind. At 6 p.m, Grandma and Hetty would take the bus into town, dressed in their best marquee dresses and doused in tweed perfume. With ringside seats in hand, they'd settle down for an evening of having their excitable imaginations fed. Now, Grandma couldn't abide injustice. Often she got so incensed with a referee or one of the refflers, she would climb up into the ring, armed with her handbag, and wield it to deadly effect. The recipient generally got a good gubbing to the head. Her aim was inch perfect. On their feet, the crowd roared with delight, egging her on further, and still her hair stayed in place. Once a month, the community room held a jumble sale, raising funds for the church roof. Now I, for one, had never seen a leak or a hole in it, and I wrote, "Don't recall ever seeing it being replaced." But everyone diligently chipped in without question. The jumble sales were the place where you saw all manner of human behaviours. We'd form an orderly queue, including Silver Cross prams, bicycles, wheelchairs and dogs. And when the doors finally opened, there would be a surge and everyone got squashed at the entrance. By this point, children would be screaming, mothers shouting, and colourful language filled the air. Once inside, it was a race for the heavily laden trestle tables, to find the right clothes for the right occasion. My mother often dragged myself and my brother there, lifting us up onto the tables. We were to stand, having been stripped down to our vest and pants, in situ. Numerous articles of clothing were tried on, and occasionally our original clothes got lost. But no matter, they'd probably come from the previous jumbly anyway. At times, life was a bit trying, but our reality was no different to those living around us. It was the norm. We all wished for better things. Everyone played the pools once in a while, and holidays were generally camping or a day at the seaside. Most importantly, though, we were happy and rich in life and laughter.